Okay, thank you. Look, I have a Bible verse. I'll share a couple on the way, but just I'll have you turn to the last one if you want to, from Joshua chapter 19. Thanks for being out and being faithful to, the church. When the church has got something on, you know, it's just good to be faithful and support that. And that's a sign of people's character when they do that. So not really surprised to see the faces I see. I know your walk already, but God bless you for being here this morning. And the brief I got for this morning was one, and two, just how to engage with missions. It was very interesting to me listening to Brother Unruh, because there's just so many similarities to things that he said that we deal with. And I haven't talked about the things that he shared, but it's very similar. We had Buddhist people in the government, and I'll be careful what I say, because nothing stays in one place anymore. I've learned different things. But I had Buddhist people in the government say to us, look, don't blame us for this. It's not us. They said it to our men. It's not us doing this to him. It's his own people. And I said to my Thais, what did they mean by that? Who's their own people? What does that mean? And that, you know, they just saved out of Buddhism. They were like, I don't know. And it turned out it was the two groups that preacher mentioned have given us the most grief over 15 years and have done things that frankly are unspeakable and I wouldn't get into and have chosen not to speak about over the past 15 years, but have caused great angst and troubles. And it's come from those sources. That was not something I knew that I was going to face when I went to Thailand. That was not on my radar that those kind of things happened and that's what you had to deal with. So that was a similar thing. It was the Buddhists saying to them, leave him alone. Why are you doing this to him? He's helping people. He's taken people. Their lives have changed. They've got better. He's loved. We're on his bank accounts. We're on all his email. We know what he gives. And he's giving everything he has to these people. Why are you doing this to him? The forces of darkness come together in opposing the light. And you'll be surprised who will work with who to come against people who preach the gospel. The reason for that is because they have the same father. They're of the same source. So their labels may be different, but they're being organized by the same leadership. It's the same father working with them. So that's a reality on the field. What he shared, and is something that you have to deal with. And visas are a second thing. And we also were bouncing in and out for the first number of years. At first it was a 90-day visa. You could get a year's visa, but you had to exit every 90 days. And even then that was sort of, not everybody could get it, but we sort of got it. So you would bounce out every 90 days, and that meant the family out as well. So for me, if I was out preaching somewhere, I'd get back in, it would re-kick the 90 days over. But often for Suzanne and Curtis, it meant they had to cross the border into Laos, which is a land bridge crossing, or they had to cross the border into Cambodia, or they had to cross the border into, the Thais say Pamar, or Myanmar, or Burma. You had to cross that way. And that's just an ongoing, you know, visas are an issue that probably we should direct more prayer towards, because they can be a real source of frustration and difficulty for somebody on the field who really just wants to get on with the business of preaching the gospel and reaching people for Christ, but they're just realities of what you have to deal with. So, you know, please, in your prayers, start to mention visas. You know, God give them that. So we actually transitioned about 3 years ago. I thought through some things, and I hope it was the leading of the Lord. We established a non-profit foundation because the government doesn't recognize Nakhon Sawan Baptist Church. The powers that he spoke of, the two groups that he spoke of, prevent us even registering a church. They will not allow you to do that. Many years, Dr. David Gibbs told me that before I'd got to Thailand, he flew over to Thailand. A missionary there asked him to come and meet with the government and try to get some legal recognition for independent Baptists in Thailand so that we could, you know, be there. And he said, Brother Gibbs told me that he met with various legal people on the culture ministry and those things that we don't even have in Australia. It's a little hard to get your head around it unless you're in Southeast Asia, in countries where religion and government are intertwined. It's not seen as separate identities. It's all there. And they'll actually have a culture ministry or whatever that country calls it. That believes that it's their duty to oversight religious affairs in the country and all of that. So Brother Gibbs met with those people, and there was representatives on that group from the groups that a preacher had spoken about, the other religious groups, and they were adamant that independent Baptists were not to be in and not to be recognized. And so Brother Gibbs said, well, I'll take you to the court and we'll fight it through law. And Brother Gibbs told me they laughed. He said they sat around the table, they laughed at him. They said, Mr. Gibbs, we are the law. And really, that's how it works. That's just how it works. And you say, well, that's just how it works. If the people in authority decide they don't like you, or it isn't a matter of, you know, well, I've got my rights. You don't have any rights. You're really at the discretion of their decision making. So that was a contentious issue. But about 3 years ago, we established a non-profit that we call Open Door Foundation, which is something the government does recognize. And so Open Door Foundation has an office on the site of Nakhon Sawan Baptist Church. And we have all our documents and the right pictures on the wall that we're required to have a flow chart and just Thai law. And they do come and check that. And so my status at the moment is that I am a volunteer with Open Door Foundation. And so as long as I fulfill the requirements, which are fairly broad, it's a year-to-year process. So we just went through that a month ago. It takes about 2 months to do, and it's a rolling every year. So there's screeds of paperwork. We're still dealing in a day over there where everything is just piles of paperwork and 1,000 signatures on documents and all of this stuff. But the Lord has blessed us and enabled us to get another year, and it's done year to year. For us in Nakhon Sawan, we have to be, after going through a process and presenting documents in a certain way of the Thai language, everything has to be checked and double checked. You can't use this word, it has to be this word. It's very involved. And then if that's all okay, it makes its way, for me, it has to go as high as the state premier. So it literally lands on the desk of the premier, who has to look at it and sign off on me. And if they will sign off on it, then we take that letter to immigration with other things we have, and then they will issue us a visa for a year. So it's a very laborious process. Joe's wife, Di, spends a lot of her time working on all this stuff. We don't know what we would do without her. She helped Curtis with his visa. Curtis married to Dow, so he comes in a different way. But this is just an ongoing thing, and it really is a matter of prayer. countries are not making it easy for missionaries to get in. They want to play it two ways. They want to say to the world, we are a nation of religious freedom. They want the world to hear that. But the reality is, what they mean by that is, we have Catholics in the country, and we have Buddhists in the country, and we have Muslims in the country, and it's kind of locked up to those identities. And so they have a view they like to project to the world, but then the reality on the ground is a very different situation again. And you probably, if you haven't thought about it, the groups that often oppose us that were mentioned, and the larger one in particular, you know, just about every other Christian identity around the world has caved into that and called those people our brothers. But there's one group that holds out against that and says, you're not our brothers, and salvation is this way. And there's one group that haven't been able to move. So enemy number one around the world from those people is us. We're the last people that they, because we won't yoke up and say our brothers, where others do. And so, you know, that was interesting to hear that. Very similar situation with that. And of course, Thailand is about 94% Buddhist, around about 3% Muslim. And then there's maybe a percent and a half of Catholic. Catholics just seem to be a lot more around than that 1%, probably because they purpose to be around us. But that's the demographic of the religious identities in Thailand. And so, it's, you know, that's on the ground, same things. People are worshipping at idols and statues. And I can say this, and I'll get on to my four thoughts, but I can say this, I have not lost my burden or my being moved by what I see, even after 15 years. And you understand that when you move to the field, you've got to do life. So when someone visits, there are funny things and different things, and you know, we've had visitors come and they'll poke each other and go, oh, get a load of that, will you? And you know, they're taking pictures. But when you live there, you've just got to do life. You've got to go to the bank, you've got to pay the bills, you've got to try to eat, you've got to try to live, you've got to try to sleep, you've got to try to get around. You're doing life, and it's just a place where you do life. You know, you've got to do life. But what I'm saying to you is, I've never lost the being moved by what I see. I'm always saying, I go quiet in the car all the time. I can drive, and I do drive, but now I have enough people who can drive for me. And so I often sit there, and I'm always looking. I don't play on my phone. I don't do that. I'm always looking outside, because that's the real world. Okay, the real world is not the screen, that's pixels. And that's so foolish to spend your life playing with pixels. You should lift up your head and look at the real world and the real people around you, because that's where the real need is. And so I'm always looking. I see lots of things, and see a lot of need, and see Thais living out their life, and it moves me. I'm always saying, Lord, what more can I do? Yeah, is there more I can do? Is there some other way I can go further? I can do more. I'm always looking for what I can do. I wish I could reach all of them. I really do. I have great pity for them. When I think about the judgment that's going to descend on this world not too far away, I look at all the little Thai kids I see, and they're sweet, and they're funny, they're lovely, they're usually poor, and you look at the kids and you think, you know, these kids, they didn't do anything. They don't know anything. And you say, is that scriptural? It is. God said to Jonah, there's little children here, Jonah, and you have no compassion for them. You know there's a judgment. But God pointed that out. God said there's little children here who don't yet able to have the ability to discern. And so God notices things like that. So there is great need, and I have four things with you, how to engage with missions for you. How do you keep your edge? How do you keep involved? Okay, the first one is this: see it as a matter of obedience. All right, so that's the first thing. The reason this is important, you need to ask yourself, you need to clarify, why do you do what you do? Because those lines get blurred. So why do you come to church? Well, I enjoy, you know, my friends, and Pastor Hernan's a nice guy, and you know, whatever. If you don't clarify and get clear why you do what you do, you can lose your reason for doing it. So the number one reason we do what we do is for the Lord. All right, and you've got to keep that before you. It's a matter of obedience to the Lord. Okay, I'm glad for everything else the church gives me, but my number one is for the Lord. Okay, because if my number one is something else, that can get taken away, and then you don't think you're going to keep going anymore or keep doing that. Do you understand that? You've got to say, I'm here for the Lord. And what happens is, you know, we lose our reasons for why we do what we do. So somebody in the church hurts us, and then what we do, we take that out on the Lord. So we say, somebody hurt me, somebody was mean to me, or the pastor did this or didn't do this, and so because of that, I'm not going to go to church anymore. And here's what you're saying. You're saying, Jesus, somebody hurt me, so you have to pay. I'm not going to sing your songs anymore. I'm not going to go and remember you on your day anymore. I'm not going to give the tithe to you anymore. And people do something to us, but we say, God, you have to pay. And you make, that's what you're doing. You make him pay. When you don't turn up, when you don't do it anymore, it's you're not hurting people. You're denying the Lord what is rightfully his. So the first reason you do missions is because it's the right thing to do. It's just about being obedient. Jesus said in John 8:29, and he that sent me is with me. The Father hath not left me alone, for I do always those things that please him. That's Bible words. I do the things that please him. Jesus said, that's what I do. And that's what you have to do. You have to examine your motives, why you do what you do, and you've got to come to the place where you do it because that pleases him. And if you do it for that reason, you'll keep on doing it. Because other things will let you down. Feelings will fail you sometimes. You know, I have frustrating days on the field. I have days where you know, I'll be sitting and the guys will hear me mumble, Thai people, you know, Thai people, you know, and I'll mumble away at something and something frustrating will happen. They don't mind. They you know, they're very understanding of my life and what I do, and they love me dearly, and they're okay with that. They never get offended at all, because you know, when you're certain of somebody's love, you're really certain of it, you don't really take offense. You know it's really nothing. Sometimes I'll say to them, I'll say, I have a joke for you. I'll say, how do you know when an Asian has broken into your home? And I'll tell them an Asian joke. And they laugh. Or sometimes they go, I don't understand that. And I'll go, no, it's about this. Can you see this? No, I really can't see that. And we just laugh, and there's no, you know, you don't think somebody's racist when that person has laid with you in a slum and carried you out and stayed with you in the hospital for days and fed you and loved your mother and father and your family and taken care of you and took you in when nobody else would. You don't question somebody's love when you have that kind of history. And so the first reason to support missions and do it and give something to missions is because it's pleasing to the Lord. Feelings will fail sometimes. You know, love your church, love your preacher, love what we do, try to always be that way, but you'll have days where you wake up and don't feel like going to church. I had them and I was the pastor. You know, you'll have days where you just don't feel great. Okay, but your feelings cannot be your reason why you do what you do. They're wholly unreliable. It's great when they're there, they add a little wind to the sail, but you need to keep going even when they're not there. Feelings can fail. People can disappoint. So just log it right now. The best people can disappoint. People who were good before, something may happen tomorrow. Okay, people can disappoint. So don't tie your obedience to people. Don't be shattered if someone lets you down. It hurts, but don't tie your obedience to that. Don't tie what you do to people, because people can disappoint. So doing it for the Lord is the reason you stay involved with missions. Number two, have some compassion for the need out there. Don't become hardened to the need. And if you need to do something to get your compassion back, go and do it. Take a trip somewhere and go and see. And get out there and actually see what's there and open your eyes to the need. It's everywhere. And you know, when you have compassion, that carries you a long way. I was in southern India 3 weeks ago, and I was there just to preach a meeting. I was there about a week. A couple of people from Faith Baptist in Sydney joined me over there. I took one of my ties in with me. I took O, and I had a wonderful meetings there. But you can't help but to get out and about and just see what you see, and compassion. You just feel very moved for the need of what you see. And compassion's biblical. All right, compassion is a trait that Jesus had. And it said in Matthew 9, verse 36 and 37, when he saw the multitudes, so he mustn't have been looking at the phone, he had to be looking out. When he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion on them. Okay. So compassion will move you. Compassion will move you to do something. God uses compassion in our life to lead us, sometimes to give, to lead us to do, to lead us to go. Compassion is okay. It's still a good thing to have. So have some compassion on the people who are out there. There's just tremendous, tremendous need. I feel, I wish I had, I don't mean this to sound like sort of, holy, but I wish I had more than one life to give him. I wish I could give a life to Burma. I wish I could give a life to southern India. I wish I could give a life to Laos. I wish I could give a life to Cambodia. I wish I could give a few more lives to Thailand. Because the need is so apparent, and the darkness, and so few people have ever heard the gospel. Poverty is ever present. A lot of just difficult things. Compassion. So missions, do it because it's right. Be obedient. Secondly, have some compassion to what's out there. Okay, when you stop giving, you show indifference to the need of the world. And indifference is dangerous because God might need to say to you, you have too much. You have too much. You have lost touch with people in need. And God may have to alter your circumstances to soften you up. So don't make God do that. Keep your compassion. Stay in touch. Take a visit. Listen when missionaries tell things. Don't get over it. Try to stay informed as best you can. Honestly, Australia will swallow you up with just, mundane life, and you'll just lose your way. And I've watched people here do this all the time. And you'll just get frustrated with your life and frustrated with what you do. And you're just spending time and you've lost perspective of what it's all about. And you've got to get that back, because you won't keep going when you lose your way. And you'll lose your way internally before you'll lose it visibly before others. Do you understand? You'll lose your compassion inwardly before it'll eventually show outwardly. So compassion is important. Number three, commit to contributing. Make a commitment that I'm going to do something, I'm going to contribute. I have the example of the churches in Macedonia mentioned in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, who gave even out of their poverty. So, you know, different people have different capacity to give financially. Give just at what you can, but commit to it. Commit to it if the church didn't promote missions all that well that year, it shouldn't change what you do. You still do what you do. You know, if the speakers were not particularly motivating that year, it shouldn't change what you do. It's a commitment. It's a commitment to contributing. It's a commitment to giving. You do it for the Lord. Our Thai people give to missions, and they have very little, really very little. Tomorrow I'll bring Golf up on the stage and I'll tell you his story and I'll show you his picture. He won to Christ about 2 years ago. I won him. But I'll tell you a bit about his life. But Golf's salary is $350 a month. That's his salary. And you say, oh, I bet that goes a long way in Thailand. Not that far, to be honest. But your time, you pay your bills. And you know what? He has to help his mother and father too. That's expected in Asian culture. They call and say, we don't have enough and he has to do that as well. And I'm just saying they don't have much, but they tithe. They tithe. And you imagine taking the tithe, they know that tithe would probably feed them for, you know, 2 weeks. But that's God's. They tithe. And then above that, they give towards missions. And they do it out of their poverty. They do it out of what they have. So, you know, there's no excuse for anybody. It's either a principle or it's not. And if it's right, it's right everywhere. So just a personal commitment. I'm going to contribute. I'm going to keep doing that. I'm going to finish my course. You know, others may change. I'm not going to. I know it's right. I'm going to keep doing it. And then lastly, Joshua chapter 19. Let me read a verse. It's a verse number 9. And Pastor preached on this text a while ago, but it says, out of the portion of the children of Judah, Joshua 19:9, was the inheritance of the children of Simeon. For the part of the children of Judah was too much for them. Therefore, the children of Simeon had their inheritance within the inheritance of them. So quickly what happened was, when the people got to the land, they drew lots to determine who would get what portion. Now, God was controlling that. The lots were just to determine what God had decided. That's all that was. But nobody knew what they were going to get. Nobody knew what area they were going to get, where they were going to get. So it was done tribe to tribe. Judah got their allocation first. I think it's in Joshua 15. And then the second up for your draw, however that worked, was Simeon. And when Simeon drew his draw, all the tribes would have been there. It turned out that Simeon's was inside of Judah's. Now, that's the only tribe where that happened that way. All right, but God said something. God makes a point here in the scriptures, explains it. He said, because, look in verse 9, the part of the children of Judah was too much for them. Well, hang on, you gave it to them. The what Judah had was too much for them, but you just gave it to us. Okay, here's the principle. God often gives you more than you need. And what he's given you was not meant for you, it's meant for somebody else. That's why he did it. So he's purposed to give you excess, that what you have would become an inheritance to somebody else. And so what happens is that sometimes we are given more because it's meant for another. And that's what you have to understand. It's not everything given to you is for you to keep. Sometimes you're given more because God says that's for them. That's the way I resource them. And when you do that, you have what the Bible calls a shared inheritance. And I've preached on this without ties. I did this over four messages. But the concept of a shared inheritance is where both of you are invested in the same thing. So parenting is a shared inheritance. A man and a lady come together, two single people marry, then you have a child. All right, that child is a shared inheritance. You both have an investment in that going well. So when you give to missions out of your portion, that becomes a shared inheritance. That's why the people who give to missions most care about it. There's been several groups, individuals, who have a shared inheritance in Nakonsawan Baptist Church, because they're the ones who have, a lot of people have given, but certain, and everybody has a part, but there are some who really, it's really personal. So when they come, they walk the property and they're looking at it like it's theirs. And they'll say, we need to do something about this over here. And yeah, we do need to do that. And what about this? How's that working? Because they've put into it. It's a shared inheritance. So sometimes what God is giving you is more than you need. And that's deliberate. It's not a mistake, because it's actually intended for another. And by the way, Judah freely accepted that. And by the way, they worked together. In Judges chapter 1, I think it's in verse 17 or thereabouts, Judah says to Simeon, and it's worded this way, Simeon, my brother, let's go and do this together. And it was, we're together. God put us together to achieve this together. Simeon, my brother. And they shared that. So sometimes God will resource you above what you need, because the intent is it's meant to resource somebody else. That's really all I have. Of course, missionaries on the field, we really can't work jobs. We may have to open a business or do something like that. But legally, if funds fall short, we can't get out and say, well, I'll just do a night shift somewhere. The legalities don't allow that. It's just not permitted in the law over there, in most places. So you are reliant on what comes in. Now, I can't chase everybody up every month and say, what happened? Did you forget me? We just have to just accept what comes. For our ministry, what comes is dispersed amongst the need with the tithes. When it comes, that's when we all get what we get and work it out. If it's short, we're all short. If it's above, we can do something else. But please don't forget your part in that, because we can't call you up, and we're not going to call the pastor every month and say, what happened? We really just leave it in the hands of the Holy Spirit and the people of God. But know this, when you're being obedient to the Holy Spirit, you are doing what God wants you to do. And you may not fully understand what that fell out unto, but you will one day. All right, that's it for me, Pastor. Thank you.